Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's the last day of May 2018. Hello and welcome to Africa Link. Live from Bonn, Germany, I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Be sure to drop your comments and share this audio. Coming up, hundreds of Kenyans take to the streets to protest against massive corruption.
We want the government to bring back that money and invest it in the young people for a better future in this country.
And children's rights group Save the Children says more than half of the world's children are threatened by poverty and conflict, most of them in West and Central Africa.
We are speaking about 87 million children who are at risk to lose their childhood, either because he's going to die before the age of five, either because he won't be able to complete his education, or either because he will be enrolled by force in a conflict, having some violence linked to that conflict.
We have these stories, plus your reactions on our Facebook page. But first, let's hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in the capital Pyongyang, where the two parties discuss bilateral relations and key international issues. The visit comes amid increased diplomatic discussions over the peninsula as the U.S. continues pressing the North to disarm its nuclear weapons in exchange for economic relief and the lifting of sanctions. Speaking Thursday in the Korean capital, Lavrov pushed for diplomacy with its neighboring country.
Russia, from its side, as a permanent member of the UN Security Council, as a member of the six-party talks, and simply as a good neighbor of North Korea, is ready to contribute to these efforts. Our North Korean friends welcome that, and we discussed several steps that could be taken in this direction.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with North Korea's top diplomat in New York ahead of a planned summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and Korean leader Kim. Elsewhere, U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross announced that the U.S. would impose tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from the EU, Canada, and Mexico starting Friday. Ross said the tariffs went ahead after talks with the EU failed to reach a satisfactory agreement. In Portugal, German Chancellor Angela Merkel discussed shoring up EU efforts against Trump's so-called trade war. Speaking before the tariffs were announced, Merkel said Europe would respond in a firm and united manner.
If indeed these tariffs are imposed, we have a clear stance at the European Union that these tariffs are not in compliance with the World Trade Organization.
Merkel declined to offer details on how the EU might respond, but stressed that the bloc would need to act together in all matters. Meanwhile, Merkel also held a briefing with Portuguese Prime Minister António Costa and President Marcelo de Souza in Lisbon on the second and final day of her trip to the Western European country. The Portuguese government said talks centered on EU economics and its budget and the refugee situation in Europe. It is her first trip to the country since 2012. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The South African government said it was battling an outbreak of the African swine fever, a highly contagious disease that causes fatal hemorrhages in pigs but does not affect humans. The country's agriculture ministry said it was first reported in the Northern Cape province. The country's pork industry has been dealt a blow from an unrelated listeria outbreak that killed more than 200 people since January of this year. And finally, Real Madrid head coach Zinedine Zidane has announced his resignation. It comes just 5 days after he led the Spanish football club to an unprecedented third consecutive Champions League crown with a 3-1 victory over Liverpool in Kiev, Ukraine. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Zipora Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. We are also live on Facebook, so do make your voice heard concerning some of the stories that we are covering. And the first story that we'll start with is in Kenya. Earlier today, hundreds of protesters took to the streets in the capital, Nairobi, to denounce one of the biggest corruption scandals ever to hit the East African nation.
54 people are accused of colluding with banks and companies to successfully defraud the National Youth Service, SYS, of nearly $100 million. DW's Andrew Wasike was at the protest and sent us this report.
On the streets of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, angry protesters, numbering slightly over 1,000, who are blowing whistles and chanting slogans. The demonstrators say that Kenya is in a state of sorrow, as corruption has paralyzed any progress for the nation. The latest scandal being the nearly $100 million, which was stolen from the National Youth Service. That money that was meant to create employment for the youth and arm them with necessary skills to become self-employed. 22-year-old Ibrahim Abdi, a young graduate who has yet to secure employment, told me that the youth have decided to take matters in their hands to secure a future for themselves.
As youth, we are jobless, we are vulnerable groups, we are into crime and drugs and other things because we are desperate, we have nothing to do. We want the government to bring back that money and invest it in the young people for a better future in this country.
According to the latest survey from the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics, 7 million Kenyans are currently unemployed, with 1.4 million desperately looking for work. Wanjeri Nderu, one of the organizers of the protest, told me it is because people are stealing from the youths that Kenya has such grim youth unemployment figures.
If they were not stealing, this country would have industries. But we don't even have those industries because the money that they are stealing, it's being used by individuals. So the youth are disenfranchised. They're killing the future of this country every single day, walking away with money that is meant for the youth.
One of the protesters, Alamin Kimathi, also a human rights activist, said that he came out to express his outrage towards the spate of unbridled, audacious and senseless looting of public funds orchestrated by Kenyan politicians, business people, banks and companies.
Our enemies are a tiny group of privileged elites who have amassed great wealth from public resources. Let us never allow looters, thieves and murderers to bribe us with our resources, which they have stolen from our coffers.
The Directorate of Criminal Investigations has said that a total of 6 banks were involved in the theft of public funds. At least 30 people out of 54 who are the main suspects in the scandal have been charged in court, among them Youth Affairs, Principal Secretary in the Public Service Ministry, Lillian Omolo, and the National Youth Service Director, General Richard Ndubai. Charges read to them include corruption, fraud, and abuse of office.
Andrew Wasike reporting in Nairobi.
And you've been giving us your views on that story. Fanuel Kakoshi says Africa is interspersed with corruption, greed, and political brigands. And he goes on to say, and is slowly becoming an unacceptable way of living.
And Masaba Putin says, why protest? Yet those who embezzled funds have been arrested. Stay calm and let the law take the charge.
Yeah, that is surely his view. So keep on writing and we will read when we can. We now move to the international scene where Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is visiting North Korea, a trip seen as an attempt by Moscow to make its voice heard as its neighbor pushes for diplomacy with the rest of the world.
Lavrov's visit comes ahead of a planned summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, scheduled for June the 12th in Singapore. Sela Oneko has more on Lavrov's visit.
This was the first meeting between the North Korean leadership and a top Russian official. After his arrival, Russia's top envoy, Sergei Lavrov, met his counterpart, Ri Yong-ho, at an assembly hall in the capital. Following that meeting, Lavrov said Russia welcomed the contacts between North and South Korea, as well as between North Korea and the United States. Despite having a border with the North and relatively cordial relations that President Vladimir Putin has seemed to want to develop further, Russia has so far remained largely on the sidelines as North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has emerged onto the world stage this year. Kim has already met twice with China's President Xi Jinping and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. A top North Korean official is now in New York to discuss with U.S. officials the agenda for the much-anticipated summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, scheduled to take place on June 12th in Singapore. Washington is demanding that North Korea quickly give up all its nuclear weapons in a verifiable way in return for sanctions and economic relief, a move which Lavrov said does not augur well for the upcoming summit.
As to sanctions, it's absolutely obvious that when a conversation starts about solving the nuclear problem and other problems of the Korean Peninsula, we proceed from the fact that the decision can't be complete while sanctions are still in place.
Pyongyang has a different view of denuclearization and remains deeply worried that abandoning its deterrent would leave it vulnerable, especially while the United States remains a robust military presence in South Korea and Japan.
Sela Oneko with that report.
And now moving back to Africa. At least 87 million children from West and Central Africa are at risk of not only losing their childhood but of early mortality. That's according to a new report released by Save the Children organization. The worst place for a child to grow are conflict-prone areas and where education is not a priority. Among some of these countries are Niger, Nigeria, DR Congo and South Sudan, which are all trailing in the last 10 in the report.
Now, Nigeria had the greatest decline in the region, dropping by 65 points due to the rise in malnutrition and child labour rates. To shed more light on this, I talked to Eric Hazard from Save the Children Regional Advocacy Director in West and Central Africa.
We are speaking about 87 million children who are at risk to lose their childhood. To make it simple, this is one children out of three who is at risk to not being able to complete his childhood, either because he will gonna die before the age of five due to a disease who could be treated, either because he won't be able to complete his education, or either because he will be enrolled by force in a conflict or having some violence linked to that conflict. But what is clear is that in this region, these children are more and more affected in country where there is some current conflict. And when you are a girl, you have more probability to be affected and to not take advantage of your childhood and to live your childhood as a normal child, which should be normally learn, play, and just prepare your future.
Most of the countries which are actually at the bottom are countries where there have been conflict. Nigeria had the greatest decline in the region. What has brought about this drastic fall?
In country like Nigeria, in the northern state of Nigeria, in Borno state, it's one out of two schools which are closed currently, and more than 1,000 schools which have been destroyed, which means that you have thousands of children who have not been able to get access to schools for months and even for years in the state of Borno. And this is the same in many of the northern states which are currently affected by the conflict.
As people working in the ground, what are you doing to ensure these are not just annual reports? Is Save the Children doing more?
We have been opening some project to ensure that even in a conflict situation, children will continue to get access to education. This is a program around education in emergency, program around school zone of peace, ensure that even in a conflict, the schools are protected and the different belligerents cannot use the schools either to host a general headquarters or to use this in another manner, which is different from getting access to education, even in conflict area. But we are also investing a lot in ensuring that the girls particularly can get access to schools.
That is Eric Hazard from Save the Children Regional Advocacy Director in West and Central Africa.
And now, Zipporah, let's go back to our top story. That's the corruption scandal in Kenya. The hashtag Stop These Thieves has been trending. And Boniface Mwangi tweeted, "We know at President Uhuru Kenyatta, you're going to sacrifice small thieves and the big thieves will not be touched. If you're really serious, fire all big thieves. Have them prosecuted, protect and reward witnesses and whistleblowers. Anything short of that is just PR. Hashtag Stop These Thieves."
Yes, and another activist and blogger, Cyprian Nyakundi, says with the hashtag Stop These Thieves is a proper trial run for a proper people's revolution in a few years.
And a blogger and activist, Robert Alai, says, "By the way, tell me in a very simple language how a former secretary, cabinet secretary, came to build or even own Radisson Blue Hotel. What magic did he perform? Hashtag Stop Ufisadi," which is a Swahili word for stop these thieves. So you see that hashtag's trending in Kenya about the corruption scandal in Kenya.
Yeah, I think many people actually are feeling the effect and want to talk about it. So we'll see how this protest will work out in the...
Thanks for those comments. Keep them coming in on our DW Africa Facebook page. We'll read them when we can. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. Let me first take this opportunity to welcome our Facebook listeners. Silva Albato is listening to us from Cameroon, and Joshua Adepo, who is simply saying hello. We got the message.
And still to come, Ugandans will in 2 months' time start paying for using WhatsApp and other social media platforms, and many are not happy about the new laws.
At the end of the day, telecommunication companies will hike the price at which we also pay for stuff, for different services. I think it's wrong.
Let's get your tax on you who is calling on WhatsApp, on you who is calling on Skype, because the government is investing in connectivity.
Stay tuned to that story. Now, you probably heard about the backlash Rwanda caused after it announced plans to use English football team Arsenal as a venue to market Rwanda's tourism. Well, unknown to many, Rwanda's parliament has voted a bill on manufacturing, selling and acquisition of arms.
The law has generated mixed reactions among the public, with some saying Rwanda is still fragile after its genocide history and that domestic violence is on the rise. But the government is seeking to address those concerns. DW's Etienne Gatanazi reports.
In the very near future, Rwanda might have gun shops, stores or depots. That is if President Paul Kagame signs a bill that was recently passed in Parliament, which allows the manufacturing, possession, selling and carriage of firearms. A similar law which existed back in 2009 only stipulated gun possession. The law was hardly known in the public. The latter has apparently alarmed a section of the Rwandan population. Johnston Businge, the Minister of Justice, has sought to reassure the public at a press conference.
What alerted people is thinking that buying and selling guns will be an easy thing, yet it is not the case. There should be no panic. If you followed the Parliament session talks, it is a long list of requirements for one to possess it. It is almost impossible.
Some journalists, such as Robert Mugabe, who were present at the press conference, were not fully convinced by the minister. He argues that it may become difficult to restrict the profit-driven gun manufacturers.
When the product is in your market, the regulators are tight, everything is strict. But as the producers, they will not be producing once in a year. They will be producing every day. So they will be looking, desperately looking for clients. You cannot continue to manufacture and incur production cost without selling.
Critics say Rwanda is a still fragile society that needs healing 24 years after the 1994 genocide. Domestic violence is also rife. According to the Ministry of Gender and Family Promotion, the month of April alone recorded 230 cases of attempt to domestic violence, such as beatings and harassment. Journalist Robert Mugabe thinks it's not a good idea to allow the Rwandan public to possess guns at this stage.
There are things we can't do in Rwanda, not because they are bad, but because the society has not grown to that extent. You cannot bring firearms in a country which has a history of highest crime in the history of the world, which is genocide. You cannot.
And that story was compiled by Etienne Gatanazi. Now, Zipora, it's a very controversial move to want to allow Rwandans to own public guns.
Yeah,
after what happened.
Yeah, I think people are still divided on the issue, and that needs proper monitoring because it's a very sensitive issue.
That's right. Just going to our Facebook, our main story on the Kenya corruption scandal. Umar Ahmad Abubakar says Africans must rise to defeat corruption and challenge corrupt leaders, as no continent will do it for them.
Yeah.
Speaking out.
Ugandans will now be charged on a daily basis for the use of social media platforms like Facebook, Skype, and WhatsApp. This follows the parliament move to pass controversial tax on both mobile money transactions and social media. The new law will impose a mandatory Uganda shilling 200, equivalent to 0.5 cents US dollars daily levy for WhatsApp users starting on the 1st of July, while mobile money transactions will also attract a 1% levy on the total value of transaction.
However, many Ugandans have termed the new laws as unrealistic, while those supporting it say it's the high time the government started raising revenues from the many social media users. Frank Yeager has more reactions from Kampala.
Larry Tayebari has been following the parliamentary debates on imposing tax on social media. She had hoped the bill would not go through, which was not the case. Ayebari now fears that the cost of living is going to increase.
Violation of human rights. Social media should be free, most especially the internet, because most of these apps really are what make up the internet usage at the end of the day. And it's going to hike the cost of living, because at the end of the day, telecommunication companies will hike the price at which we also pay for stuff, for different services. I think it's wrong.
However, the government has defended its move, saying it will increase revenue collected from the new taxes. As the Minister of Information and Technology, Frank Tumwebaze, explained,
let's get your tax on you who is calling on WhatsApp, on you who is calling on Skype, because the Rwanda government is investing in connectivity.
Many, like Cesar Uchen, a local print media journalist, say the new laws will affect his work.
Taxing social media will be curtailing freedom of expression and freedom to information. If I want to get information from DW, the amount of time you spend reading, it means it is the amount of money you are going to incur. Any tax wouldn't be disputed, first of all, because taxes are a contribution towards our development as a country. That argument that in Uganda, with the high corruption levels, the taxes are not helping the common man down there.
But the debate on tax on social media faced stiff resistance from some members of parliament. Paul Lutamaguzi says the new laws will be a hindrance to development, especially among young people.
It is unfavorable. They discourage innovations and inventions. Most youth have been using innovations and inventions, using internet. It's been helping. Now you are discouraging them. Besides that, internet services have been useful to people in the transfer of knowledge, using WhatsApp or Facebook, or even Twitter. Now they are going to tax them.
During parliamentary debate, Winnie Kiza, another member of parliament, emphasized there are other options for collecting tax other than on social media.
Let us increase taxes, for example, on tobacco consumption. After all, it is written that taking tobacco kills your life. Let's make more taxes on consumption of alcohol so that we can make our youth more productive.
To be more productive.
However, legislators backing the new laws like Odonga Oto argue it will lessen the burden of borrowing.
You know, the traditional calls, the 80s, where you dial, the world has left those analog days. People are now using mobile phone, but there are people who are smarter and they are not using airtime. They are using internet and they make internet and voice calls. So government is losing taxes. So for me, I personally support the issue of taxation on the internet and voice calls so that government can raise money.
And that report was compiled by Frank Yeager in Kampala.
And Crispin, as you would expect, this is a very controversial law, which is eliciting lots of reactions. But first, we go to our Facebook page. Columbus Mavunga says, "This Uganda's new social media law has just sickened me. Is it a crime to be on social media?" He's asking. "Africa, Africa, how do we share information if you are penalized for it? Where do we ordinary people get the money?"
A very good question from Columbus there, because, if you buy data or you still pay for the internet, it's more or less you've already paid for all these social media platforms. But, Uganda doesn't agree. Museveni's government doesn't agree. And they now want to tax people for social media.
Yeah, and of course, we also have lots of reactions on our Facebook page, as you'll expect. Temite Arisa says, "Tactics to silence the voice of the masses, and they're trying to stop a revolution that might start from the social media."
And Don Wilson says, Uganda, we are under siege by this old-fashioned and tyrannical ruler. I thought the UN had internet as a basic need." That's right. He did declare, the UN has declared it as a human right, but unfortunately, it's a non-binding resolution.
But this is unusual. Enomis Mensah says, "I support it, but as usual, money is going down into politician pockets."
Yeah, that's also another point there. Didi Dickens, "After the country is sunk in big debts, Museveni has decided to tax social media. Soon he will tax everything."
Yeah.
Keep those comments coming. We'll read them whenever we can.
Use on.
On July 29th, the West African state of Mali will elect a new president. Among the candidates will be incumbent Ibrahim Keita, who is 73. His main challenger, Soumila Cisse, is 68. The youngest candidate who has little chances of being elected is 45-year-old former Prime Minister Moussa Mara.
And yet, three quarters of Malians are younger than 35. Many of them will be voting for the first time in July. What do they think of the upcoming elections, and do they feel that they have anyone who can actually represent them? Bram Posthumus is in Bamako and has been finding out.
The Malian capital, Bamako, will not decide who becomes Mali's next president. True, it's an important place with well over 1 million registered voters, but the rest of Mali is home to at least 5 million more. No, the decisive demographic in Mali, like everywhere else in Africa, is young. What do they think of the upcoming elections? Here's 22-year-old Mariam Diko, who works as an accountant.
We are not going to vote for a candidate because he gives us money. We have many problems in this country, and these must be solved. So we are going to vote for a candidate who will keep his promises and develop the country.
Last year, President Keita's plan to give himself more power by changing the constitution ran into difficulties. It was a youth-led movement that took to the streets and managed to force the president to abandon his plans. Part of that movement then became an organization known as the Collective for the Defense of the Republic, CDR. The leader of the CDR is Mohamed Youssouf Bachili, known everywhere in Mali as Razbach.
Celui qui prétend conduire les affaires publiques, qui est l'élu, se doit.
Anyone who wants to be elected into a position of public responsibility must make a contract with the citizen. It's about the citizens. They will tell these public office holders about their lives and where they want to see improvements.
And those improvements could be anywhere. Education is in a very poor state, and so is healthcare. The security situation in Mali is in steep decline, with many parts of the country now unsafe for travel. And a political class that has for decades been deaf to the demands of ordinary Malians, the young and the old. And that's got to change. And the young are looking for someone to do just that. But the question is, who?
Yes, I will go and vote for someone who can take Mali forward. It must be someone who has the capacity to help Mali get out of this bad situation.
The voice of Araba Keita, who is 18 and studying media and communication at Bamako University. She does not believe the CDR or its leader can do this, and she may have a point. Just before the CDR published its own manifesto, its leader aligned his organization with the election campaign of 68-year-old veteran opposition politician Soumaila Cissé. That was not how things were supposed to go. So perhaps the youth of Mali will have to look elsewhere yet again to find someone who can deliver the change everyone is dreaming about.
Bram Posthumus with that report in Bamako.
And we did ask the young people, does your vote count in your country? Amaka Eze says, in Nigeria, our votes don't count. The political class decides who will win.
And Felix Yagazie says, maybe in many generations to come, but not now. This is because the youths are not ready yet. And now this story breaking in Madrid. Real Madrid coach Zinedine Zidane has resigned unexpectedly, and we posted that on our Facebook page. And Chinyere Ezefe says, a very good move. Leave when the ovation is high. The club may not win the Champions League next season, so this is the right time for the most decorated manager to step aside.
There's one controversial comment here from Toju's Humble, who says, Real Madrid is worst club on earth.
I don't agree with that comment.
They don't know how to appreciate legends. I'm not done. And they pay very low wage just to players. I don't know if they pay low.
All right, then Brian Kiyune also says, I'm not a Madridista, he's not a fan. Nevertheless, it breaks my heart to see this man leave.
And Amina Ibrahim Hassan actually thinks that's a class and wise decision.
Well, we'll have to wait and see whether this was the right move for Zidane. Anyway, thank you so much for your contributions and for listening. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Until next time, bye-bye.